Across the country, Republican lawmakers are enacting laws to create stronger requirements for people to vote. From President Biden on down, those laws are being criticized as restricting access to the voting booth. But here in Nevada, where Democrats are in control of the state house, many new proposals would create more opportunities for people to vote. Assembly Speaker Jason Frierson is sponsoring a bill that would allow a majority of Nevadans to vote by mail. Another would replace caucuses with a primary election. He talked recently with State of Nevada legislative reporter Bert Johnson.
Speaker Frierson, welcome back to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
You just introduced a bill that would make the majority vote by mail system that was passed last summer permanent, but it does a lot more than that, too. Can you give us a brief overview of what this bill would do?
Well, sure. I mean, the action that we took over the special session in the midst of the pandemic in 84 was certainly designed to give people access to the polls without putting their life at risk. But it was also an opportunity for us to test what has been done in several other states, including Washington, Oregon, Utah, expanding access to the polls. And so the turnout was so huge. And I think that voters' reception to using that as an option was so significant that we felt like this was an option that we should not take away from Nevadans. And so what we came up with was AB 321 that is still a work in progress. And I am still looking to invite conversations across the aisle to make it better, to increase voter confidence in the process. But at the end of the day, we are expanding the number of polling places. We are allowing folks to mail in their ballot, drop off their ballot, or they can still vote in person. One of the other additions is adding an opt-out provision. So if folks are so against even having a mail ballot sent to them that they can opt out and not have that sent to them. We also, in 321, added requirements about annual training for election officials so that they can get forensic training. We added a requirement that the Secretary of State work with the Office of Vital Statistics to try to increase cleaning the voter rolls. And again, we're going to continue to work to make this as safe and secure and certain of a process as possible.
And let's talk about those election officials you mentioned. Some of them, including Washoe County Registrar of Voters Deanna Spicula, has submitted a letter in opposition to the bill. And she's saying that's because they don't have the capacity, at least right now, to make the changes under AB 4 permanent. And meanwhile, of course, the state has also lost a lot of money thanks to the pandemic. So how do you plan to pay for the changes you want to see here?
Well, thank you. And it's a very valid concern. And it would not be fair and it would not make sense to put that burden on local election officials without giving them the tools and resources they need to do it. So I've had very productive conversations with our local election officials. They are, I believe, the best in the country. And now work begins in trying to provide them with the tools they need in order to be able to do it.
Speaker, you sponsored another bill that would replace the caucus system with a primary election, and it would also make Nevada the first state to weigh in during presidential primaries. Why do you want to see that change?
Well, I think there was an interest in us moving from a caucus to a primary when we saw the huge interest in participating. The caucus process is kind of a pep rally, and it's exciting. But I think that there are a lot of folks that didn't want to spend the whole day at their local elementary or high school, moving from one side of the room to the other. And I think, again, as we see increased interest in participation, folks want to be heard. They want to participate and cast their vote. So I know that my Republican colleagues expressed interest in the exact same concept of moving from a caucus to a primary state. And so we're going to consider moving in that direction. I also think it's important that we try to maintain our position as an early state, not for selfish reasons for the state of Nevada, but, you know, also because these candidates need to be able to make their case before a diverse constituency that's tackling diverse issues. And so Nevada is a very, very diverse state, the most diverse state of the early states. Nevada is tackling a lot of the issues that are important and resonating across the country, whether it's issues related to immigration or criminal justice reform, election reform, climate change. We have, issues with respect to Yucca Mountain. We have the first female majority legislature in the history of the country. These are all things that I think are trending throughout the country. And Nevada is a small and manageable enough state that candidates, I think, would benefit from making their case and testing their messages before a diverse constituency that reflects more accurately, I think, the country.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Assembly Speaker Jason Frierson about some of the voting reforms he'd like to see. Speaker Frierson, under your leadership, Nevada Democrats are working to expand voting access in Nevada, but across the country, the picture is very different. Republican-led state legislatures are enacting stronger voting restrictions, like in Georgia, where a new law has shortened the time people have to request a mail ballot, and it also blocks organizations from giving out snacks and drinks to people who are waiting in line within 150 feet of the polls. What does that tell you about Nevada's priorities versus those in other states right now?
Well, you know, I think it's very telling that we are trying to make sure that we give every eligible Nevada voter choices. It's about freedom, and that's something that Nevada's always been about as a battleborn state. So I think that we are simply making a statement that we value access to the polls. We value increased record participation in the electoral process. And I think that we'll continue to lead in that regard. But we also value it being safe and secure and reliable. We have work to do to educate the public and to make sure that we increase voter confidence. But at the end of the day, I think you see those other states that are taking action that's in response to elections where they lost ground. To the contrary, here in Nevada, we expanded access. And guess what? In the assembly, we had a Democratic supermajority and we lost 3 seats. But it still is the right thing to do. And so just because we lost 3 seats didn't mean that we're going to go back and try to find a way to change it so that we could get those 3 seats back. I think expanding access is a nonpartisan issue. It's an issue of democracy and access. And I'm proud of the work that we've been able to do to maintain security, but increase options for all eligible Nevada voters.
And so far, your Republican colleagues have been pretty clear that they don't like the idea of extending vote by mail here. But during a hearing for your bill, you said you were actually including a lot of changes based on their feedback. So do you expect your voting bill to eventually get any bipartisan support?
Well, you know, I will always try to reach across the aisle to get bipartisan support. You know, all we can do is offer an olive branch and try to address those concerns. We have and will continue to do that. I think, unfortunately, with the national rhetoric, there may be no way to get some people to come across. So it would behoove my minority colleagues to come forward and offer amendments that would garnish their support, but would mitigate what they think might be harmful or unwise. And I'll remain receptive throughout the rest of the session, if there's an interest in doing that.
And what about some of the voting changes that GOP lawmakers want to make? Republicans have bills that, for example, would undo the vote-by-mail system that was adopted last summer, and they also introduced proposals that would implement strict voter ID requirements. Are you willing to vote for or consider any of those bills?
I am not interested in moving backwards in Nevada. And so to the extent that there are policies that are being proposed that move us away from increased access, that move us away from, you know, less intimidation and more opportunity to participate. Yeah, we're not going to consider moving it out of backwards. But if we're talking about expanding access, making what is a constitutional right, not a privilege, more accessible, I will remain open to those ideas and you know, we'll continue to work across the aisle to try to find any common ground if there's common ground that can be found.
And GOP lawmakers are also saying they keep hearing from their voters that they're fed up with the electoral system. They say they want to restore faith in elections by making it harder to cheat with their bills. So in your opinion, do those arguments hold any water?
Well, look, I don't believe that those arguments hold water. No one wants to make it easier to cheat, but no one wants to make it easier to intimidate or to limit folks' access either. So we have our Republican Secretary of State who's indicated there's been no systemic fraud in the most successful election in the state's history. Our local election officials have said the same thing. And so, again, it's incumbent upon us to continue to communicate that to the public, communicate some of the compromises that we've made, some of the amendments that we've made to make it more safe and secure. There are always going to be some folks that just don't want anything. They, quite frankly, some have openly stated that they want to make it more difficult. It shouldn't be easy because it's so important. And I just disagree with that fundamentally, that we should make this fundamental constitutional right as easy and accessible while maintaining safety and security as possible. And the same, you know, emails that we get from our Republican constituents that oppose it, we get tons of emails and calls and support from our Democratic constituents as well. And again, through the next 55 days, we'll continue to make ourselves available and reach out to our Republican colleagues to try to find common ground.
Assembly Speaker Jason Frierson, thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thank you again for having me.
Assemblyman Andy Matthews of Las Vegas wants the state to roll back its vote-by-mail system, not expand it. He talked to State of Nevada legislative reporter Bert Johnson.
Assemblyman Matthews, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be with you today.
Assemblyman, you're sponsoring a bill that would undo the vote-by-mail system. And I wanted to ask specifically, would this be a full repeal of AB4, or is it targeted at any specific part of the law?
Yeah, well, I appreciate the question. And the short answer is that this would be a full repeal of AB4 from last summer's special session, which I think the evidence is clear, did implement a number of policies that I really do think undermine the security and integrity of our election system. You know, in our system of government, the right to vote is perhaps the most sacred right we have, or at least among them. And we all should do everything we can to ensure that those who have the right to vote have the ability to vote and to do so legally and to have their voice heard in our system of representative democracy. But as part of that, we really need to make sure that it is only legal votes that are counted.
And AB4, and again, this was the bill that allowed every registered active voter in the state to get a mail ballot. It only takes effect during a state of emergency, so it's not a guarantee that it's ever going to come into effect again. Why take the time now to roll that back?
Well, because I do believe that even in a state of emergency, you know, this was not a system that needed to be in place. I don't think it's something that was necessary, and I don't think it's something that was helpful in terms of, you know, those goals that I outlined at the outset. And a lot of people don't realize this, but we have what's called no excuse absentee voting, which means anybody who wants to vote by mail absentee can do so upon request. And we've got a great system in place with safeguards, you know, regarding absentee balloting, which makes sure that, you know, those who are voting are in fact who they say they are. In fact, there's a number of bills that are moving forward during this current session that would actually improve and increase access to no excuse absentee ballot, including for voters with a number of different disabilities, to make sure that we accommodate those people and make sure their voices are heard. And so the process of just universally mailing a ballot to everybody, I thought was unnecessary, even in times of an emergency. But what goes even further, and what's especially problematic, Bert, is that, you know, Democrats were pushing a bill during this session, Assembly Bill 321, which got a hearing last week, which would remove the stipulation that universal mail balloting only be done in an emergency. This would permanently entrench those policies. And in every election going forward, whether we are in a state of emergency or not, we would have this universal mail-in balloting. And this is problematic for a number of reasons. Number one, Nevada has notoriously unclean voter rolls, which means you've got ballots going out all over the place, and they are addressed to individuals who do not live, in many cases, at the places where those ballots end up. I cannot tell you how many voters I spoke to individually during my campaign last year. And I talked to many, many voters knocking on doors who would say to me, you know, I got five ballots in the mail sent to my house, and only two people live here, and I've never heard of these other three people. And this was during a general election when I'm talking to not just Republicans, which, you know, I'm a Republican, but talking to independents and even some Democrats who are saying, why are these ballots coming to me? I don't know who these people are. And the reason that matters is that, you know, that individual voter may say to himself or herself, well, I'm an honest person. I'm not going to fill out somebody's ballot that doesn't belong to me and send it in. But they don't know that the person down the street is going to have that same level of integrity. And that just does so much damage to voters' trust and confidence in our system of voting. And those who are supporting Assembly Bill 321 now are making much about the fact that, well, we have an opt-out provision in 320 in AB 321. If you don't want to get your ballot mailed to you, then you can simply opt out. Well, two problems with that. Number one, you know, that puts the burden on the consumer, if you will, right? The voter in this case. But the opt-out clause does absolutely nothing to remedy the problem I just described of ballots being sent to the wrong place. And that is the core security problem with universal mail-in balloting. 321 is going to do absolutely nothing to remedy that problem, but it will permanently codify the fundamental inherent problems of universal mail-in balloting. It's why I very strongly oppose this.
Assemblyman, you're also supporting a bill that would change the way Nevada's voter registration list is maintained. What exactly would AB 264 do?
Well, I would defer to the you know, primary bill sponsors on that. I know that I'm supporting a number of different, you know, measures that would help enhance the security of our election system. You know, and this is one of the main things that I'm supporting is making sure that when somebody passes away, you know, we don't just let that person remain on the voter roll. And that's just one example. I know there are a number of bills that are being supported by, you know, myself and others on my side of the aisle that really would take the step to improve election security here in our state. You know, there are a couple of bills that would help put into place, you know, voter ID, which I think is extremely important. You know, we take it for granted in so many facets of life that, you know, to participate in a given activity, you need to show ID. It's just a common sense measure. And unfortunately, it just doesn't seem that those on the other side of the aisle are inclined to support it, which I think is a shame.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Republican Assemblyman Andy Matthews. He's sponsoring a bill that would repeal the vote-by-mail system that Nevada adopted for last fall's election. All of this is happening in the context of what people are calling Trump's big lie, which is his false claim that the election was stolen from him. And to be clear, national researchers and Nevada judges have found no evidence of widespread fraud. So, for the record, do you believe Donald Trump's presidency was stolen from him?
Well, look, you know, Joe Biden is the president of these United States, and I have no interest in relitigating the past. The problem with our current system is that it's designed in such a way where it's hard to know the extent of fraud or error. You know, you'll probably recall that first we were told by those who supported the system, well, there was no fraud and error in our elections. And then when that argument became impossible to defend, they moved the goalposts and they started saying, well, there was no widespread fraud or error in our elections. Well, how do you define widespread? You know, the bottom line is we should not accept any level of fraud or abuse. We got to do all we can to make sure that we don't have that. It is all a recipe for just a complete destruction of any kind of voter citizen confidence in our system of elections. Don't forget, you know, the presidential race is one race on the ballot, you know, in the entire country. Joe Biden is our president. Now, that's the reality. We all need to accept that. We need to look forward on it. What we need to do, and my job as a state legislator, is to make sure that we have a system that's secure, that has integrity, so that this crisis of confidence doesn't happen in the next election. And frankly, in every election to come, if 321 ends up becoming law here in our state.
And just one final question about all that. Do you think that former President Trump bears any responsibility for the loss of faith in U.S. elections that you're describing?
You know, I was talking to voters when I was knocking on doors. And again, these are Republicans, these are independents, these are Democrats. They were getting these ballots sent to them, and they were raising concerns to me well before anyone knew the outcome of this election, well before former President Trump started, you know, challenging or questioning the results. You don't need Donald Trump. You don't need any kind of political pundit. You don't need Andy Matthews. You don't need somebody else to start talking and pointing out problems to call into question the security and accuracy of our elections if you're a voter. Because again, I heard this firsthand from voters well before then, Republicans, independents, Democrats, who can see it with their own eyes. This ballot was mailed to me. This is not my ballot. I've never heard of this person. I have no idea the extent to which this is going on across our state. And I have no idea what other people might be doing with these ballots. That's what we need to fix forward. And that's what I'm focused on.
That was Assemblyman Andy Matthews. Assemblyman, thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate being here.
Democrats want to expand access by making vote-by-mail permanent. Republicans are backing measures that would roll that back and add the requirement of a photo ID to people who want to vote. Zoltan Hinal is a political science professor at the University of California, San Diego. He studies the effects of voter ID laws on voter turnout. Professor, welcome to State of Nevada.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Great to have you. Professor, in two recent studies, you used verified voter data to analyze the impact of strict voter ID laws. These require a voter to show a photo ID or their vote would not be counted. What did you find?
Sure. Yeah. The bottom line of both studies is that the implementation of strict voter ID laws differentially reduces turnout of racial and ethnic minorities. So groups that are traditionally disadvantaged are being even more disadvantaged by these laws, and the racial inequalities that we have are exacerbated by them.
Now, there are other studies out there that we found that attempt to look at the possible effect of voter ID laws. They show mixed results. Some support your findings, others don't demonstrate much of a difference. What do you make of that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, part of that is these laws are relatively new. And so older studies that didn't even sort of distinguish between what we would call a strict photo identification law, where you have to show a photo ID in order to vote, versus other less strict laws. If you look at these really stringent laws, that's where you see the effects. And you have to be looking at more recent elections where they've actually been in place, because they're a relatively new phenomena. So that's part of it. In fairness to my social science colleagues, this is a hard issue to study. So, looking at relatively small changes in minority turnout in a state is difficult to do, especially if you're sort of using a survey where there's only a few of them in that state. So it's a complex thing. But if you look at official voter data, if you look at more recent elections, and if you single out strict photo ID laws, you tend to see this differential negative effect on minority turnout.
I'm sure people listening right now, some of them might be thinking, I have a driver's license. It's not that hard to get a photo ID. What's the big deal? So, Professor, what are some of the ways that these laws could be keeping people out of the polls?
Yeah, well, I mean, the real answer to this question is a lot of people are sort of on the fence about voting. It's great when people do, but a lot of people aren't extraordinarily motivated. And when there are small hurdles, those small hurdles can actually reduce their turnout. So we know, factually speaking, that a decent share of the population and a larger share of the racial and ethnic minority population doesn't have the valid ID required to vote in certain states, like, say, Georgia coming up or Texas. And so they have to go through a hurdle to get an ID. If you're a rural voter, that might mean traveling an hour to get that identification. That might mean in some states spending $50 or $100 to get that identification, all for this purpose of voting, right? And so, yes, it's not a huge hurdle, but it is a hurdle. And mm-hmm. and if our sort of motivation in democracy is to make participation as broad and as even and as possible, any new barrier is moving us in the wrong direction.
That's Professor Zoltan Hajnal. He's a political science professor at UC San Diego's School of Global Policy and Strategy. And now I want to bring in Emily Prasad Zamora. She's executive director of Silver State Voices, a nonpartisan group that advocates for expanded voting rights. Emily, welcome to State of Nevada.
Hi, Joe. Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. Emily, a part of your work involves community outreach, getting out the vote efforts. Based on what you've heard, how do people feel about having the option to vote by mail?
Yeah, So Silver State Voices, I want to just give a little bit of context, is a civic engagement table of 19 organizations that are all 501c3s that are doing civic engagement work in the state of Nevada. And that's not just in Clark County, that's all across the state. And they're talking to different constituencies, not Democrats or Republicans. They're talking to the everyday Nevadan about the issues that matter the most about to them. And yes, they are talking to them about the electoral process. And what we saw overwhelmingly in this last election cycle is that Nevadans do support the ability to cast their ballot via mail and like to have those options. I mean, we saw over 48% of Nevadans voted by mail in this last election cycle.
Yeah, everybody got a ballot mailed to them. Right now, you can get a mail-in ballot with a request, an absentee mail-in ballot, but you don't have to give a reason why. So what do you think? Is the system that we have now doing enough to make sure people can vote? Or was it simply the fact that we had a pandemic going that so many people took advantage of the ballot that was mailed to them?
You know, I think there's a couple of different factors here. I think one, a lot of people didn't know before this last election cycle that you actually could vote by mail. So there's an education piece there. And so sending it to everyone really educated a lot of people that, yes, this is an option. You don't have to go in person. You can actually vote at home. So I think that's one of the biggest pieces here that we saw. And I don't think that our current policy is doing best. Why do we have to have a provision that requires people to make the ask for a ballot? Why can't we make voting more accessible for everyone? If you don't want it, there is the opt-in process. You can, you know, request written to your county clerk that you don't want the ballot. And I mean, Joe, we as Nevadans live very busy lives, right? What's to say you may have a plan to that on election day, you are going to go with your family in person and vote, and you may have a family emergency and may not be able to just cast that ballot and wait in that line. You can very quickly just fill out your ballot, put in your mailbox, and your vote would be counted.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about some of the bills in the legislature that could change the way we vote in Nevada. And that's Emily Prasad Zamora with Silver State Voices. Now joining us is Brian Melendez, and you might recognize his voice and who he is. He was one of the hosts during our Race and Racism series last fall. He's also a coordinator with the Nevada Native Vote Project, which works to get more Indigenous Nevadans to the polls. Brian, welcome back.
Hey, good morning.
Good to hear your voice again, Brian. You know, Brian, the new vote by mail system that lawmakers approved over the summer during the pandemic allowed one person to deliver several ballots to a drop box or a polling location. Republicans say that's wrong, but from the point of view of Native American voters who may live hundreds of miles from the polls in Nevada, what did that mean?
It meant, I want to frame this in a way that people can understand, and I want to do the best I can to be as objective about this as possible. But first and foremost, when we're talking about the tribal population, especially in the state of Nevada, that a mass majority of our 27 federally recognized tribes and colonies are remote rural locations, right? And you have people and you have community structures that have experienced all different types of disenfranchisement and marginalization to begin with historically. So when you bring that historical disenfranchisement up until, let's say, 2020, what you're looking at is you're looking at tribal communities who've always had the structural lack of resources to supply to their citizenship base. And that means that the primary lack of resources is going to be housing. Housing is a major concern on Indian reservations, not just in Nevada, but across the country. And so what a lot of our community people have faced, myself included within the reservation structure, is the issue of mass homelessness. And what I mean by mass homelessness is that our culture as a community construct, we look at our communities and our families and say, you know what, in our culture, we just live together. We've always lived together. This is just how we exist. This is our culture. But somehow in the historical context of us being, you know, indigenous people living on the land, living within our camps selectively with each other, and then having to live with each other multi-generations in these, you know, one or two bedroom homes is very different. So going from this tribal construct into this modern construct where we're all living in a house, that makes a huge impact. And so when I'm saying that one household can contain multi-generations of voters. One household can have anywhere from 7 to 8 voters in a household at some point. At some point, there are families and households that the reason that they participate or the reason why they vote or the reason why they do whatever they do is because maybe one or two people in that household is really engaged or is kind of aware of what's occurring, and they're educating the people within their household, and then that's how they vote. And not only that, if there's only, you know, one household with multi-generations, very often that same household only has one vehicle. Sometimes that home doesn't have internet access or computers or resources like that. So we're dealing with a whole construct of, you know, unfortunate circumstances. And so when it comes to the mail-in vote, or when it comes to the ability for a family member or an individual, responsible individual, to take those ballots over, that works. And it worked during the global pandemic, and I see that working moving forward because our community has responded really well to that.
What about this question of voter ID laws? Republicans in the Assembly have bills that would implement that here. You have to have a voter certified ID. If that got passed, what would it mean for Native voters here?
So one of the problems that we saw, especially during kind of the early voting process, was that we were trying to educate our tribal citizenship bases across the state to let them know, you know, if you can go and vote early and get to that place and bring your ID, you'll be able to vote. You can participate. But there was a lot of people within our tribal communities that didn't have driver's license. They didn't have state ID. What they did possess were tribal identification cards. So they're tribal cards that are given to them. And those cards are created and distributed by the enrollment departments of each, you know, federally recognized tribe. And so those cards are the signifiers of their citizenship status within the tribe. So they could take those cards and take them to the polling location and vote for the most part. But I think that there's always going to be a structural problem with people in those spaces having those, you know, driver's license per se, because again, like I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of people in the reservation that live super far away, right? Some of these reservations, it's a 3-hour round trip to get groceries, and it's even further to get to a DMV. And so if you don't have a car and you don't have resources, then you probably wouldn't need a driver's license. So these are some of the structural problems with that. So
you were also part of the statewide effort to get the vote out in Native communities during 2020. Did the mail system the ballots were sent to everybody, did that work to improve turnout by Native Americans here?
Absolutely. The vote by mail process was extremely helpful in the sense that we were able to, as you know, these bases of people working all through the grassroots areas within the tribal spaces, to get people engaged and to have them check their mail, right? And people were really receptive to the mail, right? And so that was easy. That process seemed to work for people who wanted to participate in the mailing process. But again, like I mentioned before, you know, that people don't always have their physical location. People are always struggling to be where they live. So I can tell you from my own experience, right? living on the reservations, living in those spaces. My mother's address, right, where my mother mm-hmm. lives and where we grew up on the reservation, that's the most consistent address that I will probably have in my adult life. And so if there's something really, really important, then I use my mother's address because that's the address where I know that I will always get my mail and I always get that. But I can tell you this, that I have relatives who are in the same predicament as I am. And it's like my mom's house becomes the place where everyone gets their mail from. So I have two or three relatives that'll go there, they'll get their mail, they'll check in, you know, once a week or whatever that is, get their mail, and then they'll process their mail. And so we've kind of been habitually conditioned to this only because we need a physical location. So if people are homeless, they don't have a place to go, they will almost always have a place where they can get their mail.
Very interesting. Professor Zoltan Heinel, political science at UC San Diego School of Global Policy and Strategy, you earlier heard Assemblyman Andy Matthews talk about why he thinks it's a bad idea to automatically send mail ballots to registered voters. He's concerned it leads to a lot of people to doubt the integrity of the results. I wonder what your response is to that.
Sure. I mean, one of the issues is there's this, we wanted to make a distinction between claims of problems and actually evidence of problems, right? Mm-hmm. So we've had all sorts of instances where vote by mail has been enacted. So not just in 2020, but in several states around the country, there are at least five states that are all mail, all vote by mail, and many other states that allow all sorts of voting by mail. So we've got lots of experience with this, and the empirical evidence is essentially that those structures work quite well. So they tend to increase voter turnout. They may or may not actually make the representativeness of the voting population greater, but they do increase turnout very clearly. And there's no evidence that they lead to Americans feeling less trusting or believing that their elections are more fraudulent. So they work and they work well.
And that's University of California, San Diego Professor Zoltan Heinel. He studies voter ID laws. We've also been joined by Emily Prasad Zamora and Brian Melendez. And earlier, we did speak to Assembly Speaker Jason Frierson and Assemblyman Andy Matthews. And what we've been talking about are Republican lawmakers across the country enacting stronger requirements for people to vote. But just the opposite thing is being sought in Las Vegas. Democrats are in control of the state house, and a lot of new proposals would create more opportunities for people to vote.